Book 2. Muad'Dib. When my father, the Padishah Emperor, heard of Duke Leto's death and the manner of it, he went into such a rage as we had never before seen. He blamed my mother and the compact forced on him to place a Bene Gesserit on the throne. He blamed the guild and the evil old baron. He blamed everyone in sight, not excepting even me, for he said I was a witch like all the others. And when I sought to comfort him, saying it was done according to an older law of self-preservation, to which even the most ancient rulers gave allegiance, he sneered at me and asked if I thought him a weakling. I saw then that he had been aroused to this passion not by concern over the dead duke, but by what that death implied for all royalty. As I look back on it, I think there may have been some prescience in my father, too, for it is certain that his line and Muad'Dib's shared common ancestry. In My Father's House, by the Princess Irulan. Now, Harkonnen shall kill Harkonnen, Paul whispered. He had awakened shortly before nightfall, sitting up in the sealed and darkened still tent. As he spoke, he heard the vague stirrings of his mother where she slept against the tent's opposite wall. Paul glanced at the proximity detector on the floor, studying the dials illuminated in the blackness by phosphor tubes. It should be night soon, his mother said. Why don't you lift the tent shades? Paul realized then that her breathing had been different for some time, that she had lain silent in the darkness until certain he was awake. Lifting the shades wouldn't help, he said. There's been a storm. The tent's covered by sand. I'll dig us out soon. No sign of Duncan yet. None. Paul rubbed absently at the ducal signet on his thumb, and a sudden rage against the very substance of this planet which had helped kill his father set him trembling. I heard the storm begin, Jessica said. The undemanding emptiness of her words helped restore some of his calm. His mind focused on the storm as he had seen it begin through the transparent end of their still tent. Cold dribbles of sand crossing the basin, then runnels and tails furrowing the sky. He had looked up to a rock spire, seen it change shape under the blast, becoming a low, cheddar-colored wedge. Sand funneled into their basin had shadowed the sky with dull curry, then blotted out all light as the tent was covered. Tent bows had creaked once as they accepted the pressure then, silence broken only by the dim bellows wheezing of their sand snorkel pumping air from the surface. Try the receiver again, Jessica said. No use, he said. He found his still suit's water tube in its clip at his neck, drew a warm swallow into his mouth, and he thought that here he truly began an Arakeen existence, living on reclaimed moisture from his own breath and body. It was flat and tasteless water, but it soothed his throat. Jessica heard Paul drinking, felt the slickness of her own stillsuit clinging to her body, but she refused to accept her thirst. To accept it would require awakening fully into the terrible necessities of Arrakis, where they must guard even fractional traces of moisture, hoarding the few drops in the tent's catch pockets, begrudging a breath wasted on the open air. So much easier to drift back down into sleep. But there had been a dream in this day's sleep, and she shivered at the memory of it. She had held dreaming hands beneath sand floor where a name had been written, Duke Leto Atreides. The name had blurred with the sand, and she had moved to restore it, but the first letter filled before the last was begun. The sand would not stop. Her dream became wailing, louder and louder. That ridiculous wailing. Part of her mind had realized the sound was her own voice as a tiny child, little more than a baby. A woman, not quite visible to memory, was going away. My unknown mother, Jessica thought. The Bene Gesserit who bore me and gave me to the sisters because that's what she was commanded to do. Was she glad to rid herself of a hearkening child? The place to hit them is in the spies, Paul said. How can he think of attack at a time like this, she asked herself. An entire planet full of spies, she said. How can you hit them there? She heard him stirring, the sound of their pack being dragged across the tent floor. It was sea power and air power on Caladan, he said. Here, it's desert power. The Fremen are the key. His voice came from the vicinity of the tent's sphincter. Her Bene Gesserit training sensed in his tone an unresolved bitterness toward her. All his life he's been trained to hate Harkonnens, she thought. Now he finds he is Harkonnen. Because of me. How little he knows me. I was my Duke's only woman. I accepted his life and his values even to defying my Bene Gesserit orders. The tent's glow tab came alight under Paul's hand, filled the domed area with green radiance. Paul crouched at the sphincter, his stillsuit hood adjusted for the open desert. Forehead capped, mouth filter in place, nose plugs adjusted. Only his dark eyes were visible. A narrow band of face that turned once toward her and away. Secure yourself for the open, he said, and his voice was blurred behind the filter. Jessica pulled the filter across her mouth, began adjusting her hood as she watched Paul break the tent seal. Sand rasped as he opened the sphincter, and a bird fizzle of grains ran into the tent before he could immobilize it with a static compaction tool. A hole grew in the sand wall as the tool realigned the grains. He slipped out, and her ears followed his progress to the surface. What will we find out there, she wondered. Harkonnen troops and the Sardaukar. Those are dangers we can expect. But what of the dangers we don't know? She thought of the compaction tool and the other strange instruments in the pack. Each of these tools suddenly stood in her mind as a sign of mysterious dangers. She felt then a hot breeze from surface sand touch her cheeks where they were exposed above the filter. Pass up the pack. It was Paul's voice, low and guarded. She moved to obey, heard the water leader John's gurgle as she shoved the pack across the floor. She peered upward, saw Paul framed against stars. Here, he said, and reached down, pulled the pack to the surface. Now she saw only the circle of stars. They were like the luminous tips of weapons aimed down at her. A shower of meteors crossed her patch of night. The meteors seemed to her like a warning, like tiger stripes, like luminous grave slats clabbering her blood, and she felt the chill of the price on their heads. Hurry up, Paul said. I want to collapse the tent. A shower of sand from the surface brushed her left hand. How much sand will the hand hold? She asked herself. Shall I help you? Paul asked. No. She swallowed in a dry throat, slipped into the hole, felt static-packed sand rasp under her hands. Paul reached down, took her arm. She stood beside him on a smooth patch of starlit desert, stared around. Sand almost brimmed their basin, leaving only a dim lip of surrounding rock. She probed the farther darkness with her trained senses. Noise of small animals. Birds. A fall of dislodged sand and faint creature sounds within it. Paul collapsing their tent. recovering it up the hole. Starlight displaced just enough of the night to charge each shadow with menace. She looked at patches of blackness. Black is a blind remembering, she thought. You listen for pack sounds, for the cries of those who hunted your ancestors in a past so ancient only your most primitive cells remember. The ears see, the nostrils see. Presently, Paul stood beside her, said, Duncan told me that if he was captured, he could hold out this long. We must leave here now. He shouldered the pack, crossed to the shallow lip of the basin, climbed to a ledge that looked down on open desert. Jessica followed automatically, noting how she now lived in her son's orbit. For now is my grief heavier than the sands of the seas, she thought. This world has emptied me of all but the oldest purpose, tomorrow's life. I live now for my young Duke and the daughter yet to be. She felt the sand drag her feet as she climbed to Paul's side. He looked north across a line of rocks, studying a distant escarpment. The faraway rock profile was like an ancient battleship of the seas outlined by stars. The long swish of it lifted on an invisible wave with syllables of boomerang antennae, funnels arcing back, a pie-shaped upthrusting at the stern. An orange glare burst above the silhouette and a line of brilliant purple cut downward toward the glare. Another line of purple. And another upthrusting orange glare. It was like an ancient naval battle, remembered shellfire, and the sight held them staring. Pillars of fire, Paul whispered. A ring of red eyes lifted over the distant rock. Lines of purple laced the sky. Jet flares and laser guns, Jessica said. The dust-reddened first moon of Arrakis lifted above the horizon to their left, and they saw a storm trail there, a ribbon of movement over the desert. It must be Harkonnen and Thopters hunting us, Paul said. The way they're cutting up the desert. It's as though they were making certain they stamped out whatever's there. The way you'd stamp out a nest of insects. Or a nest of Atreides, Jessica said. We must seek cover, Paul said. We'll head south and keep to the rocks. If they caught us in the open. He turned, adjusting the pack to his shoulders. They're killing anything that moves. He took one step along the ledge and in that instant heard the low hiss of gliding aircraft, saw the dark shapes of ornithopters above them.